I remember thinking to myself, it would take a miracle for there to be a president who will boldly and dramatically cut spending and just say to everybody, I don't care.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
Mark, spring has sprung in the Midwest, and we're seeing the starts of daffodils coming up. It's time to get the lawnmower in shape. Is that physical capital? That's what kind of capital is getting your lawnmower in shape?
It's a little bit of physical, but it's also financial because you have to go to the dump and throw away the gas lawnmower and buy the battery powered one that is superior in every way.
Oh, really? You have this belief?
Totally. And part this, I know this is a very off the cuff, but
I have, before you say it, I have always believed that the electric or battery powered lawnmower is for the beta male. So please.
Well, I also had that belief because back in the day, it was the dude that had the extension cable running to his lawnmower.
It's fact.
Like, what's wrong with that guy? But,
Who's wearing the glasses to keep the clippings out of the eyes?
Now they have. It's kind of like Tesla. Like, I don't think no offense to our Tesla driving audience. We're actually going to talk about Elon today, but it's undeniably the fastest car you can buy is the Tesla. Like the electric cars, they're faster. Well, that same principle applies to spinning the blade on a lawnmower.
Oh.
And it is, I am not a diligent mower of the lawn, so occasionally it gets a little bit tall.
You're not diligent at all. You're not a lawnmower of any description.
Well, that's true. I have a grass allergy.
Tell the people, Mark, what happens in your home. Go on, tell them.
My daughter, my middle-aged daughter, she's not middle-aged, she's the medium-aged of my three girls, is the one charged with keeping our lawn mowed.
Okay.
The whole experiment started because she couldn't get the gas mower started. She couldn't rip that cord hard enough. So that combined with the fact that our lawnmower was kind of a piece of junk, I went to the electric, and I'll tell you, that sucker, it can plow through a 4.5-inch growth of grass, no problem. Where my old one, you had to wait till it was dry out. And yeah, I like the electric mower. But I'm also sympathetic to your feelings that if I was trying to flex my masculinity with my choice of lawn appliances, I'd stick with gas.
Okay, there's something I want to throw out. I know you've got a diatribe today that's about, as people know from the title, it's about the Trump economy, the Doge people, the Elon and all of his goings on, and what it means to our bottom lines. I'm very interested in that. But I just want to throw this out. For those who are longtime listeners, there's a storyline that we've touched back on a couple of times. Do you remember when we had our good Hawaiian friend Ian Bishop on to talk about cars back in the day?
I do.
Well, he talked with me through my vehicle. Now, I'm gonna land this story by asking you, Mark, to recap for us what you said once long ago when we did an entire episode on what do you do with financial disappointments. So here's the story. I bought this Land Cruiser in 2018. It's a classic. Oh, it's a 97. It's the 40th anniversary edition. My dear friend, Mark Douglas, who has owned several of these, goes, this thing is going to run forever. It only appreciates in value. It's going to be great. So I thought, I can't believe I'm buying a 25-year-old vehicle for $21,000. But I'm going to do it. And what I saw in it that was attractive to me was, I think somebody with the skills that I have, which are not much when it comes to a vehicle, I think I can improve this thing in significant ways. I think I can make some money on the deal and drive a car that would be fun and interesting for me in the years. Well, in the intervening years, I did so many wonderful little additions to it. I gutted the interior and put in new fancy carpet and nice upholstery. And I put in a nice Apple CarPlay kind of sound unit and a reverse camera and kind of brought it up to speed. And when I was ready to put it up for sale, this vehicle that's supposed to run forever and ever, mine had quite low miles, 185. They're supposed to go 400, 500,000 miles. Guess what? The engine blew out. So I got to replace the engine for the tune of $6,000. And I just recently finally sold this thing, which I was so proud to be ready to sell. And by the time it actually sold, which was more than a year of me wringing my hands, paying top dollar to put it up on all these websites, I think I spent $1,500 just trying to sell the thing. And all told, I think I had $33,000 in that vehicle. And I sold it for $17,000, Mark. If we have a womp womp sound effect, that would be the time to do it. I like the Price is Right sound effect of failure. I'm just telling this to be upfront with the people. It's not all financial wins for us, even though we like Abraham. That doesn't mean everything's going to work out. Mark, what's the advice for somebody who has been whipped financially like this?
The funny thing, they teach us this when I did my CFP. There's a whole module on like the psychology of money, and some of it is silliness and it's not the Abrahamic way. But one of the things that you learn and they drill into your head is just that the human brain is inclined to dwell on the past much more than they should, meaning if we buy a stock for a bucket of stocks for $10,000 and it declines in value to $2,000, and the reason it went down is because that company is no longer worth much. I'm thinking of the darling of the stock market in the 80s was
Enron.
I'm thinking of Xerox and Kodak. Those two companies were killing it. Because, you know, we'll always need film. You know, how would we take pictures without film? The reality changed. And people are just very reluctant to adjust their future expectations when they have already got sunk costs. And they don't think about sunk costs the right way.
Give me a little comfort. What do you say to somebody that's been through it?
I would say, take that learning experience and stick it in your pocket and use it for other things. So if you can apply the principle of sunk costs to maybe something more important in the future, because I know for a lot of people you're listening and thinking, wow, he lost, I don't know, $15,000 on a vehicle. That's catastrophic. Praise God, Stephen. It didn't sink you financially. You guys are okay.
True.
And so if you can pay that price to learn a lesson that can then prevent you from, you know, an even bigger financial mistake in the future, that's kind of the way that the Lord made the world to work, is that we hopefully learn from these mistakes in things like money that aren't the most important things. And we can apply them to things that are even more important. So the learning might be, if we use the five capitals framework and you're thinking about things that actually matter, like men's souls, next time you find a disciple, young guy who you're spending time with and you're like, man, this guy really doesn't get it. He is a loser. I keep investing in him. Kick him to the curb
Cost.
Yeah. You don't have to throw good money after bad just because you agreed to have a coffee with him every other Tuesday.
Oh, man. You're making a joke, but that's actually true. I would just let me pause and tell the people something. I wish that I had learned the lesson. I do it now when it comes to spending time with young men. But I remember Michael O'Shields always, his kind of bar before you could spend time with him is he'd give you an assignment. This is how he would say hello. Why don't you memorize this passage? And I remember he would say, I want you to diagram Ephesians chapter 3. And I want you to do some research. And that's how you could get coffee with him, is he'd give you an assignment. And I remember thinking, that's a kind of a cold thing. And I realize, just put the bar there and your studs are going to jump over it and ask for more. And the guys who are never going to pay off are going to complain about it and go, I guess I don't have your approval. I don't know what this is about. Anyways, you're right. My learning is, if I could go back in time, would be don't try to turn like a money-making hobby out of something that you just functionally need and you're not an expert in. If I could go back in time, I would have bought a Honda and just been done with it. Just buy it.
But not a Honda pickup.
Probably not a Honda pickup. No, okay. But you know, I'm thinking if I had driven a CRV or something during, great. If I could snap my fingers and go back, I would. Okay. Now here's the setup for today. Here's the question. What's the largest human institution that there's ever been? Do you know what it is?
The largest human institution?
Yeah.
Is it the U.S. government?
It's the United States government. Do you know the largest employer of Americans?
Got to be the United States government.
It's the United States government. So if the largest institution in the land were to set out to cut the largest institution in the land, to cut its workforce, I don't know, let's say by 25%. Let's say it's trying to cut down its expenses by 25%. Let's say it's trying to get smaller. What do you think the effects of that would be on the economy if that many fewer dollars? What Trump did with federal employees, if you remember, is that he told people, I'll pay you a year's salary to quit your job. So hold on a second. Just think, if he's just handing out checks for $100,000 to go, if you'll just walk away, I'll give you $100,000. It sounds like something from the Beast Games, but they understand that in the long run, this is smarter for us and for our debt. So we've talked about inflation before, and that if you just throw a bunch of dollars into the market, it's bad long term, but the wheels keep turning. So what I'm throwing out to my people is, well, if you are dramatically shrinking the amount of dollars out there, again, the largest employer in the nation, then that has some ramifications into the economy. And I feel like there's a slowing down of these gears that would seem natural based on what Elon and Trump are doing with Doge. Do you think I'm barking up the wrong tree?
No. I'm glad we're going this way. I agree with you.
All right. Do you think that what's happening in the market is due at least in part to the policies that this administration is enacting that are specific to trying to make the federal government smaller?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that for sure I've thought a lot about how much the extremely necessary cuts to government spending, whether that's employees or, I hate to say it, because if I was a political candidate, this would be ending my career right now, what I'm going to say. But we have to cut Social Security too. Like, we can't afford to pay the benefits for Social Security that we're paying.
I have to insert, I said I was going to stop talking. Okay. I have to insert this. I just saw this today. It was a clip of President Barack Obama proposing a committee that would cut out fraud and waste from government spending. And in charge of this committee, he was going to put
Elon?
Joseph Biden.
Oh.
And they went on and on about it for like 3 minutes. They were so excited about cutting. And I would hope that any conservative, financial conservative mind would have heard that back in the day. I don't remember that happening and going, this is terrific. Just as I would hope that we would be fans of it happening today, no matter who's doing it, because our government is running headlong toward bankruptcy unless we do dramatic cuts, but that's another subject. So,
yeah, it is an existential crisis that yes. the government has because we are spending so much more than we're making. We've had the inflation debate before here. One of the things, I mean, we're recording this on a Friday. The market is way, way up. So that's cool. But one of the reasons is there was inflation numbers that came out yesterday, and it's the lowest numbers we've seen in a long, long time for inflation. And it's still not on target. It's above target still. But at least things seem to be slowing down at some level.
Another provocative sentence for you that's been I've been throwing this around my family. I have, since Reagan, did you know that we haven't had a balanced budget in over 20 years?
Not shocked.
Okay. So I've tried to explain to my children that the government, when the government rolls out a budget, they know before the year ever begins, we're going to spend more than we take in to the tune of trillions of dollars. And they don't understand that. And I go, it's one reason. It's because they know that the voters want them to spend money on their thing. And since the Reagan days, I remember thinking to myself, it would take a miracle for there to be a politician who is the president who will boldly and dramatically cut spending and just say to everybody, I don't care. I know this is going to hurt. I know you won't like it. I know there's going to be a lot of screeching and caterwauling, and we have to cut it. So we're going to do that. I always thought that will never, ever happen in my lifetime, that we will have an individual that would have the guts to do that. And it looks like perhaps that's happening. And sure enough, all of the aforementioned caterwauling is upon us.
Yeah. At very least, what's happening right now is we're cutting this. I don't even want to call it the fat because it's so absurd. I mean, you and I were together last week in Cincinnati and we were talking about this USAID, some of these donations or whatever we call them, funding that we've sent,
yeah.
where they've shown up in American cities to big nonprofit organizations that were being funded to resettle refugees. And all the buildings they were leasing were completely, not just like somebody had recently moved out, like they were windblown shells, yes. not even ever developed.
Yes.
And so some of that stuff, it's like, oh, wow, that's obvious. And sadly, that's in the billions of dollars, and it's not even scratching the surface.
Correct.
Of things that would actually balance the budget, which is why I brought up the dreaded Social Security words, because it's those big entitlement programs that at the end of the day, we're going to have to cut if we want to really see progress on kind of that deficit in the long term.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about how I think that the things that are happening with the current administration are actually impacting the market, because I think that a lot of it is connected together. And a lot of it is stuff, like I said, we've seen in the past, but some of it's brand new. So if you are a client of our financial advising firm, some of this stuff's going to sound familiar to you, because I think I wrote the best email that I've written in a very long time. Steven, somebody wrote me back and said, hey, do you write those or do you use AI?
I guess that's a compliment, mark?
My response was, Steven Manuel is my partner. Have you ever met him? And he goes, good point. Steven is better than ChatGPT. Although on this one, I think I mostly pinned it without your help.
I had nothing to do with it.
I did ask AI some questions as I went. But the idea is, I don't know if you guys have been listening to the news or watching your stock portfolios, but things have been not so bueno this year. We're kind of back to where we were before the fall of 2024. So we've lost about 6 months of gains in the market in the past few weeks. And why is it happening? Well, the thing that you brought up, the job market, looks kind of like it did in 2008, right when all the housing stuff was crashing. And that was particularly nasty in 2008 because I don't know if you remember, but everybody had borrowed like 100% of the value of their homes and mortgages. You had even worked in the mortgage industry before that, Stephen, but these mortgages were being written to people who really didn't qualify. And when you get a mortgage these days, they're like, "What's your income?" And you say, "This is my income." And they say, "Prove it." Back then they said, "Sounds great, but if your income, wink, wink, was $40,000 more, we could give you a bigger loan." And people went, "Well, what would I have to do?" And they would say, "You just have to write it right here."
That's called stated income. I'll just throw this out: during those halcyon days of the mortgage industry, not only did the firm I worked for do stated income loans, but if you didn't qualify, this is so crazy, if you didn't qualify for a conventional loan is up to 80% loan to value of the home. That's conventional, and you have to have a good credit score to get it. If you didn't qualify for a conventional loan, we could get you an unconventional loan that wouldn't just go up to 100% of the value of the home, but we could make the loan to value over 100% so that it would pay for the loan. And maybe you could take a little cash home at the end of the deal. We could do non-conventional loans to 107% for people that didn't qualify for a conventional loan. How does that make sense?
Bananas gorilla.
It's yeah.
Totally insane. And we called these, when I was in the mortgage industry, CISAs, stated income, stated asset. So not only did you get to make up your salary, they're also like, "How much money do you have?" And you said, "Oh, I'm the average American. I can't even afford a $1,500 emergency." And they said, "But if you said you had $500,000, then we could get you a better rate. And you would just have to write it down right here, and we would believe you." Wink, wink.
Whisper to me what you wish your income was.
Yeah. So that's what was happening in 2008. And then the job market started failing. And all these people who couldn't really afford their house, but they could as long as their job stayed strong, suddenly couldn't afford one payment. And we had this gigantic, disgusting domino toppling event where the whole economy melted down. Last week, some payroll data came out. I don't know if you probably see these headlines, Stephen, but there's economic indicators that get released almost every day. And some of them matter a lot, like inflation numbers. Some of them don't matter much at all, like sorghum production.
But, yeah, I depend on you for commodities prices. I don't check those myself.
But one of the big ones is payroll data. And so it came out, unemployment had gone up, hours worked hit a four-year low, and underemployment had the biggest jump it had had since 2020. And before 2020, which was really just a very small blip, you might remember we had a pandemic that shut everything down then.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember that.
Before that, it was 2009. So going back to that, like I said, 2008 vibes are happening and people are starting to go, "Well, are we headed for the same thing?" So we had that happen. Underemployment basically means people who want to be full-time employed are not. They're working part-time jobs, things like that. And on the same day, a separate report showed 172,000 layoffs in February, which is the highest we had seen since the pandemic stuff. Doge played a big role in that second number, the 172,000 layoffs. Now, the market does not think super logically when those headline numbers come out and go, "Well, if 172,000 layoffs are happening, and we, the American people, were paying for like half those jobs, but they were totally unnecessary," kind of like when they've been auditing Social Security and found that, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was something like 32 people who were over the age of 190.
No. I can give these to you, Mark. Okay, because I like repeated these immediately when I heard this to somebody around me. Okay, there are 20 million people, 20 million receiving Social Security who they say their age is over 100. There are 1.3 million people that this is my final stat. 1.3 million people receiving Social Security checks in the 150 to 159 age range.
What? I thought it was like 20.
No. That's why I interrupted you, because the numbers are staggeringly larger.
Wow. Okay. So we don't think super rationally, I think, sometimes when these numbers come out, because at the end of the day, if we're cutting unnecessary, redundant jobs from the government, I've talked to you about the one year I worked as a consultant to the government, and I got paid a whole lot of money, and they were like, your job is to do the job of this person who's a government employee, and that person didn't do anything. They just sat there, and my job was to do their job. So the idea is, if we can get rid of all those, we actually spend a whole lot less as a government, and we tax people less, and it doesn't take money out of the economy necessarily in the long run. But in the short run, like you said, the biggest organization that humankind has ever created, when they cut a headcount, that will have an impact on spending and retail and all the industries that are going to feel ripple effects from 172,000 less people working, at least last month. And I expect that number to keep going up, frankly.
Yeah.
So job loss, big thing. The upshot of all that data is that people are working less, people are getting paid less, and companies are getting nervous. So investors do not like nervous companies. They want companies that go, we see up and to the right with our sales and productivity and all those things. And that's not exactly where we're at right now. So that's ingredient number one.
Okay.
Ingredient number two is another news headline you might have seen. Have you heard much talk of the tariffs, Steve?
I have. I feel like we did an episode on those.
Yeah, we did. And I got to say, this sentence was just a banger from my email. It said, if you had...
let me set you up. Mark, if you had to look back at your email, at one of the sentences that you just thought, boy, I wish my arm was twice as long so I could pat myself not only on the back, but maybe go all the way down and pat myself on the rear for that genius of a sentence. What would that sentence be?
I liked this one. It said, if you had global trade war on your 2025 bingo card, congratulations.
I like that one too.
Because we are, even since I wrote this a couple days ago, there's been more bickering over what's getting tariffed and how, and the European Union just slapped a humongous tariff on all American whiskey, which that might sound silly, but like a huge portion of the spirits that are consumed in Europe come from the US. It's like the Jack Daniels and stuff. And this is why trade wars can be really dangerous, because it starts with, you know, we're just going to put a little tariff on, you know, steering wheels that come from Canada and you're used in Detroit to build cars. And then Canada goes, well, then we're going to do this and da 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 da. And next thing you know, everybody globally is paying way more for everything that's not made in their country. And we end up with dramatically rising prices. So these two things, the potential for trade war and the potential for less productivity in the economy, which we were talking about with the job cuts and things like that, when they come together, we get what... do you remember your parents maybe saying, hey, when we got our first mortgage, it was at like 15% in the late 80s.
Yeah.
That era when we had super high interest rates, super low growth, and super high inflation was something called... do you know the word?
Stagflation.
Boom. Stagflation. And this is like the boogeyman for the economy. It's when prices are still going up, but because maybe the job market is softening, inflation is going up, but growth is not going up with it. This is where you and I have even hashed out kind of the inflation argument, where the traditional knowledge or wisdom is that some inflation is actually healthy because you have a growing economy. And, you know, if prices, if we grew in our productivity and wages and all that, but prices stayed exactly the same, things would get weird and messy. It wouldn't make sense. You know, if you could go buy Manhattan Island for $13 million today, like you did back when the Dutch arrived, then I don't know, we would just be having warlord situations.
Yes.
Money wouldn't be the determinant. But that's what people in the like super scary case are worried about. What happens if prices keep climbing, but growth declines? And if that happens for a very long time, we are in a bad situation where people can just not afford basic things. I mean, I thought for a hot minute there that we were going to have to avoid eggs in our diet. Thankfully, there's chickens coming back online, it seems. But this is kind of what's in the stew right now. Trade war, stagflation, job market decline. And you might be hearing this and going, it sounds like we're headed for total disaster and we should all bail out of the market. But I asked, this is one of the places I did ask ChatGPT a question. I said, what are we closest to right now? If we look at the stock market drops of the past, say, 50 years. And ChatGPT,
that's interesting.
It said, all in, it feels the most like 2011 when the S&P dropped 20% over, I was working in the credit swaps world at this time. And there was fears that the U.S. credit rating was going to get downgraded. So we would not be able to borrow as cheaply and we'd have to pay a lot more for debt, which would get passed on to the rest of the economy. Everybody was panicking about that. And so the S&P dropped 20%. And people were saying very similar things like, what are we going to do? The end is nigh. It took all of 5 months for the S&P to completely recover from that. And I don't think anybody would have predicted that 5 months prior.
Yes, that's such a good thing to remember.
That's the thing about panics. I'd say that when they're happening, it feels like the sky is falling and we're in a new era of history. But the one thing that history shows us is that even if we look at the absolute worst panic, the Great Depression, they pass. And, you know, when I was writing that email, I told people, I was like, it could be that by the time this email hits your inbox, the market will have recovered. I don't know. We never know if we're dealing with a week of really pessimistic investors or if we're kicking off a humongous multi-year downturn or more likely kind of in the middle. It's like we're just having a correction in the market. The people who think they can time the market and pull out at just the right moment, and they might actually be right. They could get out of the market and go to cash and sit on the sidelines. The problem is, almost never will they guess right twice, which is what is required to do better than the person that just stays in the market. So by just staying put, you ride the wave down and you ride the wave back up. I think the most obvious example of that is the COVID drop, which happened so fast, but recovered even faster. And people who panicked when the market tanked during COVID in 2020, almost none of them got back in time. And that thing roared back even faster than it dropped. So it was a matter of days, really, to recover a huge drop in the market. So the instructive wisdom I have for the listener is pretty simple. It's just, number one, don't panic, sell. Have a financial plan that is saying, if I'm investing in risky assets and the stock market is risky, meaning it's volatile, it goes up and down, anything you put there, you shouldn't really care if it goes up or down this year, because it's not money you're going to use this year. It's money that's invested for the long haul. My second piece of advice, which is just historically zoom out, then you don't worry too much if the market drops even 20 or 30% in a year, because over the long term, it tends to return a very healthy rate. And that includes even the worst drops in history. So if you just zoom out, typically you won't feel nearly as nervous and you go, huh, I'm where I was like 4 months ago and I was feeling really great at that level 4 months ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's so important.
I think that there's a lot of people weaponizing one thing or another right now. I know that the people who love JD and Trump are going like, he's just going to take a chainsaw to everything. It's going to be great. And we're going to have an era, the golden era of American, you know, prosperity because we're protecting and all that. I don't really think we're going to see a total paradigm shift in sort of everything government. And the people who hate Trump are going, he's just ruining the whole world. Well, I would tell those people, most likely he's doing what countries have always done, which is kind of push some tariffs to bring everyone to the negotiating table. And typically they don't last very long. I hope that's the case here. I hope that we're not actually going to endure a decade-long trade war, but we'll see. It seems like the people in charge right now are getting pushback. The reason I know that most of the criticism is not in good faith is when we hear people call Elon Musk a Nazi because he's suggested that maybe we shouldn't send, you know, $5 million to some African country to support drag queen shows. I don't know. When I hear those critiques, I go, okay, we're not dealing with serious people here.
Okay. You are saying that if you have money in the market and the market goes down, it's not a good time to pull your money out of the market.
Generally, that's the case.
Now, I think some people listen to us and they hear us talking about investing into the market as a way to build wealth. And I know for a fact that some of our young listeners, they might be newlyweds, they might be near marrying, or they might be in their first 5 years of marriage and they've been paying off debt and trying to get into their house. And they have a little bit of cash savings. And they've been thinking, at some point, we'll get into the world of investing. Is now a good time to start into that world?
If you, again, if you have money that you're like, the plan for this money is to grow for the long haul for me, then the stock market is one place that will reliably do that for you over time without really requiring you to add any labor to make your money grow. So bad idea is if you say, we're going to need to buy a car next year, the market's down. I should jump in so that when it goes back up by next year, I can buy my car with even less money. That's a bad idea because, like I said, we don't know if we're going to have a 1 week downturn or a 2 year downturn. But if you're thinking, I've been meaning to start that Roth IRA and I would like to save for my retirement, which is 45 years away, now's a great time to invest. And so is 4 months ago. Spoiler. Like, we just don't. We don't stress too much about the near-term ups and downs.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was driving for, is what you just said earlier, which is don't time the market, period. If it's short-term money, you should pause before you put it into the market. If it's long-term money, you put it in the market, you don't look back, you know what the trends are over a long period of time. And when there's a downturn in the market, you shrug your shoulders and you go, yeah, that's what it does. And then just keep trucking.
100%.
Okay. I think that was a good power pellet of data based on where we are right now, Mark. I'm going to cut you off there and I'm going to switch gears dramatically before we finish today. And I'm going to ask you if you've seen this stuff that Patrick Dumont, owner of the Mavs, have said, and where your Dallas Mavericks loyalties lie these days. How are you doing?
I don't think that our listeners care, but I'll tell you that I care, and I care because I don't care anymore.
It's a huge story. Anybody that follows sports is aware of this story.
The new owner of the Dallas Mavericks got rid of the best player in the NBA who was under 25 years old, in exchange for an old broke down player who's still good when he's healthy, but is never healthy. And then claimed he did it to make the team better. And it's just, it's depressing. And the way, if the team had gone, you know, we really made a mistake here and we're going to do everything we can to fix it. I don't know, maybe, because I've been a Mavs fan since I was a tot.
Right.
Maybe I could find a way to come back to them. At this point, I want the Mavericks organization to never win another game.
Yeah.
I want them to move the team to another city.
Yes.
I can't stomach it. We took the Luka poster, sweet Luka, he didn't do this.
No.
We still took the poster down out of my daughter's room.
That is so sad.
I was playing a game of gin with my daughter the other night, Steven.
Yeah.
And you know the rules? You get points, and whoever gets to 100 points first wins. And a good hand, you might get 25 points.
Yeah.
I was winning, and I was just beating the tar out of her, and I got 77 points. And I said, I'm up 77-0. And she said, that's Luca's number. You're going to lose. And then she proceeded to blow me out from there. And so everything related to Luca is cursed now. And
there's pain, constant pain associated. Yes.
I couldn't tell you more emphatically how this has ruined. It's almost like it's ruined every little bit of fun in professional sports for me, not just the Mavericks.
I feel the same. I feel that it's ruined professional sports.
I haven't even looked at an NBA game since this happened. I've only tuned into some college basketball and a little bit of PGA Tour golf. That's it.
Well, much like Dirk Nowitzki, my attention has diverted completely away from Dallas. The only thoughts I have about the Mavericks is hate and bitterness and resentment. My attention has followed Luka. If he was, he never will be, but if he was traded to another team, my attention would follow him there as well. So I did hate watch, you know, his first game with the Lakers, because I just want to see. I feel like we did our son wrong. This is our son, and we have abused him. And I want to see, is he okay? Is he doing okay? Anyways, yeah, it's a sad day. So don't do to your market money what the Mavs did to Luka, and jerk him around before he's hit his prime. Don't jerk your investment money around, even if you feel like the market has gotten fat and lost a step. It'll come back. It has the talent. It has the tools. It has the talent. Believe in the market.
The market has kind of been drinking a lot of sweet tea and smoking hookahs lately. I agree. Yes. It's gone on a little bit of a mid-20s bender, but don't freak out and do something stupid. All right.
Okay, thanks for the update, Mark. Everybody else, run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
Why not?